Good evening, everyone. It is Monday, March 5th, and we are on the Sherman Connect call live, 9 p.m. here Eastern Standard Time, last Eastern Standard Time of the year, actually. Next weekend, we're going to be turning our clocks ahead, so we'll be back to daylight savings time. And this is your hostess for the evening, Judy Campanelli, Vice Chairman of the Board of Trustees of Sherman College. And with me this evening is honestly one of my favorite speakers over the years. I've heard many, many speakers, and I've heard this gentleman multiple times in different venues, and have always been extremely impressed with his content. I feel like I put on Facebook, like, I already know that you're going to over-deliver tonight. So I'm really excited to hear what's going to come out of this next hour or so, because I know I've heard you, the multiple times that I've heard you speak on all kinds of different things, and you just get going, and who knows what's going to come out of your mouth. But I take notes, like, feverishly every time I hear him speak, and I was so delighted to hear that I was going to be hosting you tonight, and it is none other than Mr. Keith Wasong, who is with us this evening. So I did post on Facebook. I really feel like the people who are listening tonight and in the future, as they access the archives, which I'm sure this recording will be, that's why I wanted to make sure I got it recorded, you literally should put on your seatbelts right now before he says a single word. Sit down and buckle up, because I know this guy is going to blow you away. Keith, we are so happy to have you with us tonight. Thanks for being on the call.
Fantastic. And thanks for those raised expectations. I was just going to go, I don't know, I don't have a whole lot. We can just tell some stories. Or something.
I doubt that, Keith. I remember, I don't think it was last year at the Berkshires, but I think it was maybe 2 years ago at the Berkshires. They had given you a nice chunk of time, I thought, like an hour. You had two different slots, maybe an hour and a half or even 2 hours. And I think you gave 4 hours in the 2 hours and could have gone another 14 hours. It's like, wow.
One was financial services, my day job, as it relates to chiropractic and chiropractors and talking about investments in life insurance, which is a whole other, you know.
Right. You're exactly right.
Absolutely.
So, but tonight we're not going to get into finances, although if you want to talk about finances, contact Keith and he'd be happy to talk with you about that or anything else that comes up this evening. Tonight we decided, well, who knows what all we'll talk about, but we wanted to get started because, Keith, I think you are really a master communicator, and I don't want to belittle the fact that, I thought to myself, should I, in my introduction, should I say that he's not a chiropractor? And I don't know if that, Sherman College did honor you with a Doctor of Chiropractic Humanities, didn't they?
They
so
did.
You are a doctor, right?
I have an honorary of humanities.
I've always really been impressed with the fact that you communicate chiropractic better than a lot of chiropractors I know. So I didn't know how to say that without stepping on anybody's toes, but you're a master communicator. And so I really feel like no matter what we talk about, I've always really appreciated your perspective and your ability to teach us chiropractors how to talk with, patients and our practice members. And the thing that you had suggested that we start off with was the opioid crisis, which is, a really timely topic. And let's let you get started, right? Do you feel like you would like to say anything about how you got to be where you are? Should we introduce you?
No,
let you introduce yourself a little bit that way?
People have asked me, they said, how come, why do you think you're an effective communicator? And there's really two reasons. One, I've done an awful lot of it. I mean, I've just spent 30 years. I probably have done more lectures on chiropractic out in the public than maybe anyone alive in the last 30 years. And in fairness, I don't have to be in an office all day long. I can be out doing this kind of stuff. And I know when I got started, which was back in the middle to late 80s, I would go out, and I was already speaking. I already was on the speaking circuit doing strength training, things like that. Had my chiropractic experience, and as I recovered, I would get offers to go speak, but mostly in strength training. And so I would go out, and I would do 10 minutes on strength training and then 40 minutes on chiropractic. And I would do the same thing I heard doctors doing. A lot of cliches, a lot of medical trashing, a lot of stuff that sounds really good around other chiropractors but doesn't move the needle. And I'll be honest with you, I was embarrassed. I mean, I was absolutely laughed out of rooms, and I don't like being laughed at. And so I went back and started really from scratch. And I remember, you know, Dr. Palmer in one of his green books saying, I don't write lectures, I build them. And so I started slowly building a whole lecture series, again, to be able to go out into the raw public. And eventually I changed completely the way that I communicated. And that's number one. Number two, I've been in very hostile situations. I mean, by the early 90s, I was going into pre-med schools. I was going into medical conferences. I spoke at the National Crohn's Disease Research Conference. And it was the kind of thing where, again, you better have the data. And this was long before the internet. Of course, I spent the first couple of years, you know, 16, 17 hours a day at the medical library down in Charleston, just compiling all this data, just compiling thousands and thousands. And it at one time had three storage units just with filled with papers and stuff. I mean, like, I spent more on copy paper than I did on my mortgage back then. And so I had to have the data and learn how to communicate it. But, you know, over time, and this is the takeaway from doctors. If you want to be a good communicator, you better be a good listener. You better know how to ask the right questions and then listen with absolute laser focus. You want to do a consultation case history, which I think is the most important part of the whole patient encounter, that where the person just goes, I've never seen anything like this. Learn to ask the right questions in the right sequence and then shut up. Don't even think about what your next question is, because they can see, almost read your lips, like you're moving your lips. Listen with great intensity. I'll tell you a side story one time. Let me illustrate this. I was doing a seminar. I want to say I was in Missouri, just somewhere in that area. And we were having lunch out in the little food court. And one of the doctors sort of challenged me. He goes, oh, so you do your work. And he wasn't being sarcastic, but he was, let's see you go up and approach a stranger. I said, okay, pick a table. Well, they picked a table, about eight or nine guys, a couple ladies. And they all were like worked for Verizon. They all had company corporate shirts on. And I said, okay. And I walked over. And inside of about 5 minutes, I had a conversation with this table. I said, excuse me, may I interrupt you? And in less than 10 minutes, seven of the 10 came to our table and said, who are the chiropractors? We want business cards. Okay? They sat down, six or seven new patients. And I said, "That folks, what did you just see? What's the takeaway here?" And every one of them got it. They said, Keith, I thought you were going to go over there and just lay the smack down on them. I thought you were going to break out the BJ and the whole Harvey Lillard. I'm shocked at how little you said. I'm absolutely shocked at how little of content came out of your mouth. You asked the question. You just kept listening and listening and listening. I said, yeah. You know, the chiropractic message, it's like this big, giant jumbo jigsaw puzzle. Everyone has seen all the individual pieces. They're not shocked when they see the pieces, but they've never seen the pieces assembled. It's our job to engage these people and then help them assemble that picture for themselves, which is why information is important, but it has to be preceded by engagement. You have to get the person into your realm where they're curious to self-discover, and then you walk them down that process of self-discovery. Well, when it comes to that moment where they get it, they get that spinal health and systemic health are interrelated. It's absolutely demonstrable. They get the need for chiropractic. When they come to that moment, it's because they arrived at it themselves with your help, not because you told it to them, not because you one-umped them, not because you overrode their arguments with clever arguments. It's all about getting that person to believe it was their idea along, and that's communication. And doc, that's true in any walk of life. It's what I do in financial services. It's I sell securities to people. I take money from total strangers who trust me because they trust me, because I ask the questions and I take them right where I want them to go. And so that was a long answer to a very short question, but that's the secret communication, getting them to talk, engaging, getting them to talk.
And that's a principle I think I learned very early on. It was maybe Dick Plummer, I think, that had told a story, and he said, you know, in his when he would be teaching how to do lay lectures and group, you know, educational series, he always said, you know, ask the questions, because let them answer, because who are they going to believe more than anybody? Themselves. You know, they're not you, not their friend, not their neighbor, their brother, not their spouse, but themselves. And if you ask the question and you let them do the answering and lead them, but, you know, then when they have their own self-discovery, they're sold, and they're not just sold like for a first visit or a week or two. They buy it. When, you know, they understand it, they buy it for a lifetime, and for themselves and for their families. And that's exactly what we want, you know, in chiropractic. So,
right. And that it takes a little bit of patience. And you know what? Listening is not something that comes easy to most people. It really isn't. You got to practice at it. You got to self-discipline yourself at it. So anyway, you mentioned the drug crisis, and this is for a number of years. It's been highlighted a little bit recently by our president and a few others. But about a year and a half ago, I presented up in Michigan to the MAC, and a couple weeks later, I got a call from one of the people up there who is a member of a national association that does patient chiropractic promotion. I'm not going to say their name, but there's an F in there, there's a 4 in there, and there's a C in there. You fill in the rest. And he said, Keith, we loved your story, and you know what? We're going to launch a 5-year national, maybe even global campaign against opioids and what chiropractic can do, and we want you to be our spokesman. We want you to be our man. And I said, I'm not interested. And they said, why? We heard your story. And I said, you didn't hear all my story. You know, I've not spent years rallying against drugs. I've spent years promoting the concept of spinal health and systemic health and chiropractic. Well, they 2 weeks later, the bigger boss called and begged me, offered me money. Said, this is, look, you're going to be famous. And I said, Leon Schubel already knows me. That's as famous as I need to be. And I said, look, if you guys want to do a national campaign promoting chiropractic in 1 week, promoting subluxation, I'm on board, and I know people who could really put this together for you. I may not be the guy. I'll do that for you. And they said, no, this is the hot topic right now. Here's why I say that. When you attempt to promote something by discrediting something else, even if the discrediting is factual, you're going to fail. And I hate to say it, too many chiropractors do this. When you compare chiropractic to medicine or any other form of healthcare, by default, you place chiropractic on an allopathic model or chassis in which its effectiveness can only be demonstrated by its ability to clear symptoms, which in and of itself is unscientific. You know, you can be asymptomatic, get adjusted, and actually be more symptomatic. As BJ said, you feel worse, but you get stronger. Your energy is good as you're going through that process. But you're automatically on that symptom-based model. Number two, you're actually, what you're saying is, you know what, chiropractic is better for back pain than these drugs are. You're totally reinforcing the connotation that chiropractic is about pain relief. Now, we expect conditions like pain to resolve through chiropractic care, but only because the body's structurally better, only because the nervous system has been restored, not because we're simply seeking a short-term feeling. And here's the most dangerous part of that. When you attach a positive chiropractic to a negative, like opioids, you automatically become attached to negativity. Let me give you an example. You're going to go out for the night with your husband, spouse, or whoever's listening, and you hire a babysitter. She's come highly recommended to you. She shows up on time, perfectly dressed, can serve the whole bit. She's got the checklist. She's just, this is the perfect, you know, Mary Poppins babysitter. He goes through the phone numbers and where you're going to be and this and that, what's the instructions. And as you're walking out the door putting your coat on, she says to you, hey, did you hear about that babysitter across town last week? And she drowned those kids in the bathtub and then buried them in the backyard. And all of a sudden, you're taking off your coat going, yeah, you know what? I don't think we're going out.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
She was just making conversation. She had nothing to do with it. She didn't do it. She was just repeating something that heard. But all of a sudden, anyone, and I know you can feel it, you're uncomfortable with that babysitter. You're not going anywhere. And when you attach yourself to that negative, you become part of that negative. And that's true in anything. Financial services, I used to sit down with guys. I was a supervisor, and I would take young agents out, and we'd sit down with a couple and around the kitchen table, and we're having coffee, have a nice conversation, and the agent would go, I just want you to know I'm not going to steal from you like that Bernie Madoff. And you could see the and they were genuine. They meant that. But you could see the people go from being relaxed to all of a sudden arms crossed, like, why would you bring that up? Why in the world would you bring that up? So my point is, we have these crises. We have kids and drugs, it's like the after drugs, which is terrible. We have these shootings, and I just see chiropractors rush to, well, if they were just under chiropractic care and drugs are bad, you know what? I agree factually with all those statements. But that's a negative, and it shouldn't be. We should be promoting the idea of normal physiology and what subluxations do to the body. You know what? People around you, the audience, they'll figure out the other stuff. They'll figure out whether a drug, whether a surgery, whether another procedure is good or bad. It should not be our job to assign value judgments to that. And I hate to say it, especially social media, it happens far too often. And you know, you get likes, you get other chiropractors, man, that's great, you're a warrior, and you know what? From a public perception, it's terrible. It's awful. I spend very little time, if any, talk. I talk about drugs in terms of physiology, what they do, how they affect healing, and that's it. I don't get into the deaths. I don't get the adverse reactions. People know that. That's not a mystery. So that's my big message is, you know what? I'd rather be for something. I'd rather crusade for something than to rally against something. If I'm going to rally against something, it's going to be vertebral subluxations. So that's my thoughts on talking and using drugs to try to – the negativity, the truthful negativity to advance chiropractic. It doesn't work. It actually moves us backwards a little ways.
I couldn't agree with you more. I've always thought, and I see a lot of that too over the last 25 years with all different kinds of things in medicine, you know, over the years. But I've always thought to myself, just because something else is bad doesn't make us good, you know. And that's kind of what I had, you know, my position always was with that. Like, we could badmouth everybody. There are lots of bad things in the world. But just because something is bad doesn't make chiropractic good. So we really, and so few people really know what chiropractic is and what it can do and how people can benefit
Correct.
From it, that we
Correct.
Really need to take what little time we get and give them, you know, real information about what we can do and what people can expect, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like to, you know, compare, you know, the midwives and the assisted births and the doulas. You know, when I got in chiropractic 32, 33 years ago, you know, midwifery back then in terms of the mainstream was almost, I mean, well, it wasn't almost, it was weird. I mean, you were weird, strange, whatever, and they were just as skilled, just as talented. And you know what? They stayed in their lane. They probably had some very strong opinions about childhood issues regarding medicine. They just did what they did. They just did what they did. And you know what? They're more mainstream than we are. They're part of hospital chains. They're part of birthing centers. They really have made a huge dent in modern birthing, and they've changed a lot of modern birthing practices. And we could learn from that, but we're so distracted by shiny objects. You know, we like the gold coins, this and that, da da da. And you know, if we ever get to a point where we're at 97-98% capacity, maybe it's time to look for something else. Then maybe it's time to go out and branch out. And that's not a straighter mixer thing. It really isn't. But it's about why would you turn your back on what you can benefit people the most? You can improve yourself financially from exchanging services for money. Why would you squander all that for a little shiny object over here that's not going to last?
No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
So let's talk, you know, since you're saying, you know, especially with, you know, you gave the example of the opioid crisis, what can chiropractors focus on as they're trying to communicate with people, educate people? I know a lot of doctors would love to be able to do, you know, the little side story you told us. You walk up to a table of 7 or 10 people and be able to get people interested in their services, in chiropractic services. Could you maybe talk a little bit more about communication, some of the techniques that you use, or offer some skills like that to our listeners?
Sure. I'll throw a few things out, and I want to come back around to pain if we can get back there. To me, if I'm just out and about in my daily life, I mean, I talk to people, and talking is acknowledging people. And you know what? I'm not out there with the chiropractic, you know, blinders on and who's my next chiropractic. I really don't. It's just me. I think everyone needs to be greeted. Everyone deserves to you know, say hi. I go into Starbucks and I tip them on the way in. I tip them on the way out. I ask them how they're doing. I do this to everyone, and it's not a setup for the chiropractor. It's simply facilitating communication. And so that right there, just saying hello to people, being warm with people, being genuine without an agenda. If you have an agenda, they're going to smell it on you. But it's amazing how many times you can just strike up a casual conversation, take an interest in whatever they're doing, in whatever they're saying, whatever they got going on. And it's amazing how we can come full circle and back around to chiropractic. And I'll tell you a way, if you want a strategy on how to do it. Once we've talked a little bit, we're sitting there having coffee, or, you know, I spent 14 hours at a chess tournament yesterday. My son took third in the state in Florida.
Wow! Congratulations! That's unbelievable.
And then, of course, my daughter, his twin sister, is one of the top gymnasts in the country, and so we're at gymnastics meets all the time. And so, you know, people want to talk about anything. You get that bored. But I'm sitting there chit-chatting with a guy, and you know, and I always say something like, I get a name, hey, Bob, and I say, hey, Bob, what kind of work do you do? You might be asking, well, what kind of work do you do? And, you know, he says, I own a hardware store here in Orlando, or I do this, or I do that. And I just keep asking them questions. You know what happens when you ask somebody about their work? You know what they're going to do to you? They're going to say, well, what about you? It's just courtesy. You know, it's just common courtesy. And so they say, Keith, what do you do? Now, this is the strategy. I say something like, very quickly, I say, well, I do a couple of different things. I have a couple of different businesses, but right now I work in one of the most exciting fields of healthcare, something that honestly could potentially change the world as we know it. And then I go right back to them. I go, it's going to change. So, Bob, what got you in the hardware business? And I change the subject. Now, Bob didn't hear that. He's like, I just dropped a bomb on him, and then I changed the subject, which makes Bob very curious. We're all very curious animals. If you don't believe that, next time you're in a restaurant, walk up to a total stranger and say, sir, ma'am, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can I ask you a question? And they're going to go, yeah. And say, you know what, never mind, and then walk away. They'll follow you. They'll track you down. So I dropped this casual bomb, and I go back to, well, you know, how's it in the hardware business? And he says, well, you know, my dad. So what is this healthcare? What is this? Now, understand, when he asked me what if I did, if I went off on a lay lecture about chiropractic, he'd be like, ay, God, one of these, you know, it's like that person that's in the new multi-level and they won't shut up. Because I see people do that. And so he says, well, what is this? And I always do this. I look around, I'm sort of like you know, like, this is really secret. Like, I go, well, I work with doctors that specialize in the correction, detection and correction of subluxations. Bob, you ever heard of a subluxation? And I'm doing it really quiet. He goes, no, I don't think so. And I go, you know, you would think something so devastating more people would know about. And that's kind of what we're doing as our mission. And I go right back to, hey, you guys sell riding lawnmowers? Because I really need to be riding lawnmowers. At this point, Bob is ready to throttle me with curiosity. He'll go, will you, what is this? Now, by now, usually there's 3 or 4 people leaning in on the conversation. And I always say, do you have 2 minutes? Do you have 3 minutes? I'd be happy to share this. Do you have a couple of minutes? I always ask permission. Well, of course. And if I need my phone, I have whatever tools I can do it on the back of an envelope, and I walk them through a 2 or 3 minute chiropractic, never starting with chiropractic, starting with basic physiology. I'm asking mm-hmm. questions. Bob's doing the talking. It's a jigsaw puzzle. I'm putting the pieces together. But can you see how that would affect the other? Would you agree? And I say, I work with chiropractors who do this. And all of a sudden, whatever perception Bob had of chiropractic, good, bad, or indifferent, has totally changed because I laid that foundation. And what will happen, the next step is, then all of a sudden Bob says, well, let me ask you, now we're back to how it can affect Bob, how it can affect. And when it's time to talk personal, I always talk in terms of ADLs. I talk more about prevention, performance, than I do solving of health issues. Spend far more, especially if the guy is over 30, you know, guy or gal, I spend more time talking about the lifestyle, the ADL. ADLs are the bridge between a pain-oriented person, which we all are, and a wellness-oriented patient. You got to use those ADLs. Because you know what? Pain comes and goes. I had 3 very serious injuries about 6 years ago. 2 car accidents, and I fell on an escalator. The entire right side of my body was damaged. Still is. Had to learn to walk upstairs again. And they said, Keith, you're going to need physical therapy. Now, this is in addition to the chiropractor. You're going to need physical therapy every day. I don't want to do it. I'm busy. And I'll just live with the pain. I'll just stop lifting weights. I'll stop doing this. I'll learn to sleep differently. I'll just avoid the pain. But you know what? When Thanksgiving rolled around and it was time for our family football game in the front lawn, or like the Kennedys in Florida, I had to watch all my little nieces and nephews. But let me tell you, I ruled that game. That was my game. I was the one that started the And you know what? The fact that I couldn't perform killed me. It wasn't about pain. It was about performance. And you know what? I went back home that Monday and I began doing the physical therapy. And it's where I'm at today. And so you talk to people, you talk more in terms of what the pain is doing to their ADLs now, right, in the past, and in the future. When you sit there with a 40-year-old woman who's never been to a chiropractor, she's got the neck, you almost, in a sense, have to be an advocate for the 60-year-old version of her. She doesn't know what she's like at 60. You do. And so you have to advocate. So it's not about what you're feeling today. How many times have you had a patient call you? And if we're coming up against a break, just cut me off. And they're in dire pain. They're just saying, please see me. Well, come on in. You know, we'll see you at 3 o'clock. And they don't show up, and they go, I was better. Your body adapts its way out of pain. Pain's easy to manage with all the drugs we have. If you start the relationship with pain, it's like starting a dating relationship with intimacy, with sex. It tends to define the relationship from that point forward. Now, it can be successful, but chances are not really. And so you never want to make the lead dog. You even want to define that relationship with the public, with your marketing message about pain. You make it about ADLs. And I'm quite sure we're very close to a break right now.
We certainly can be, yes. I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about the fact that I hope that everybody that's listening to the call knows that ADLs are activities of daily living, is what I was thinking. And I was going to just throw that in at some point. But I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, and that's really how we build lifetime family practices, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're focused on pain, they're either going to, you know, get better and leave or not get better and leave, right? I mean, what else? You don't have anything else to offer them, you know? So before I do my commercial, I just want to tell you that alone was worth the price of admission to this call, which was nothing, but was made this conversation worth so much more than nothing, because I love 2 things that you said. One, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated. It could be as simple as just saying hi to people. I love that, you know.
Yeah.
I see so often, and this is, I noted this many years ago, most people are walking with their heads down, looking at their feet. I don't know why it is, but when you say good morning to somebody or hi there, you know, and they look up and meet you in the eye, you like make an instant friend that
yeah.
quickly. It doesn't have to be anything a whole lot more difficult than that. You know, just smiling.
You may not talk to them the fourth or fifth time you see them. We see the same
yeah.
people all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I've said hi to a casual stranger and then said hi to them 2 weeks later in the grocery store. I don't even remember them. And they remembered me from the first time. And it starts a conversation.
Yeah. So I love that. I thought that was a gem, like beyond all gems. Because I think sometimes we just try, why do we make it so difficult? How does it be that difficult? You know, it could be that simple. And then the other thing that you do so brilliantly, Keith, is that, you know, don't shove it down their throat. It's like, I guess it's the thing that people sometimes want to do, but it never works. You just
no.
can't do that. You've got to make them want it, and you've got to ask permission. You really
if
do.
If I can't engage that person, they're just not interested. They got something else going on. Whatever. You know what? We'll talk. I don't push it. Wrong time, wrong
exactly.
place, or they're just not a candidate for my message. And
I love
hate to say this, but not everyone is going to embrace our mission. We can't sit around and worry about those
mm-mm.
who don't. You know, we can't save the world. It's a nice message, but it's a naive marketing strategy. So,
well, I think, you know, more than maybe save the world is change the world. You know,
sure.
I mean, we're called to make whatever difference we can, and that will surely not be with everyone, because everybody's on their own path, doing their own thing, got their own issues, whatever. And we just keep speaking our truth, and, you know, so you're going to attract the people that you were meant to attract.
Correct.
And speaking of attracting, Keith, I just want to tell you a little bit about it's that time of year again. I know it might not feel like it here in the great Northeast where we're about to get another 2 feet of snow, but May is right around the corner, believe it or not. And May, when I think of May, I always think of Sherman College Lyceum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the two things just go hand in hand. So May 3rd, 4th, and 5th will be Sherman College's annual Lyceum. This year's topic is called Constructing the Future. And I'm so excited about that because there are great things are happening down at Sherman College. They are currently building a new student center down there that's going to change the face of the campus there, which is the first time in years that anything like that has happened. And it's just so exciting. If you haven't seen any of the pictures, you should definitely go to Sherman College's Facebook and check out the construction that's going on there, like a major digging. In fact, it's so much construction that Lyceum this year will not be held on campus.
Sure.
It's going to be at the Marriott this year, all of it. So,
has that ever happened before?
No.
I don't think so either.
No. And so while it has been, I'm sure, inconveniencing to our students there, and they've just been real gems putting up with, you know, the mud and the, you know, not having their things where their library's in a little tiny spot now. It moved and, you know, things are always moving. You never know where anything's going to be, but what a great service they're doing to the future chiropractic students that will be attending Sherman College, because it's really a huge growth spurt. Sherman College is currently at their highest attendance, I think, ever, and they just are outgrowing the facilities. So it was time to do it. It's a great time to do it. Sherman College is in it's in great shape, and so we're really excited about the growth and excited to be putting on an excellent lineup of speakers just the same, even though it will be at the downtown Marriott. I think they might have tours. You can go and see the school, and you can see the construction and stuff, or you can stay at the Marriott and listen to a top-notch lineup of speakers. I don't recall... I think it's like 24 hours of continuing ed, 23 hours of continuing ed you can get And a great lineup in technique and research and pediatrics and I believe none other than the great Keith Soisson will be speaking. Right? Aren't you on the program? Yeah, you'll be on the program this year. That's great.
I am returning to South Carolina for that. So I do webinars for some of the classes at Sherman, but this is the first time. No, let me think about that. No, I've been back to Sherman since we moved down here to Florida, but I am looking forward to it. It's always fun. I'm always exhausted in a very good way when I leave a life.
That's right. You can sleep tomorrow. You can sleep in June, Keith.
I agree. I used to go up
and,
I was born May 31st, so I often spent my birthdays up at Lyceum, and they moved it much earlier, which I actually kind of like. I've actually grown to like it. So,
me too, Keith. When they first moved it away from Memorial Day weekend, I was like, oh, that's going to mess me up because we closed the office on Monday, and it actually moved to my birthday weekend. But so now I just celebrate my birthday with all those great folks down at Sherman College every year. That's okay with me too.
There you
so please, if you haven't already signed up, go to www.sherman.edu/Lyceum, and you can register there. And I'll look forward, Keith and I both will look forward to seeing you there.
Cool.
So that's our commercial, Keith. How's that?
Fantastic.
What are you going to be speaking on at Lyceum this year? Do you know?
I am going to do about 2 hours, and it's a familiar theme, but a little bit different. One is to take the available evidence research on subluxation. You know, you've got people outside of the Sherman and principled community that say, oh, there's no research, there's no evidence. We're going to overload them with evidence, and I'm going to send them home with enough evidence where, I mean, it's mind-blowing. And then the second hour, we're going to talk about how you put that into your community. How you put that in the community and empower people not only to embrace it, but to become part of that mission. So I really teach a referral methodology where instead of saying, oh, who do you know who needs chiropractic, we're sharing powerful tidbits of information about spinal health. You know, that's not necessarily chiropractic, at least the chiropractic, but then how do you put that in people's hands who will want to share it with others? And that's where you build those referral pipelines. And I'm going to do about 15 minutes on industry. I think it's one area that any chiropractor in their community could get easily involved in. And, you know, not from a back pain or workman's comp, but going there and talking about spinal health, systemic health, as it relates to presenteeism, and how to really build those corporate referral channels in very quickly, very easily. I've got guys that are doing it all over the country right now. And I also, of course, always give away a packet of tools that you can go home Monday and get it going. So it's not just, well, that sounded great, now what to do, but some very specific action steps. So it's going to be a fast 2 hours. Then, of course, I make a point to be there when it opens and be there when it closes. And I think a lot of the speakers agree that our time isn't done when we leave the stage. We're there to talk. We're there to communicate. Not while their sessions are going on, but I've always thought that when I go do these seminars, I have an obligation to make myself available out in the common area just talk to people. And sometimes you learn more in the hallway than you do actually in the seminar. But it's going to be a lot of fun, and I will be tired.
I couldn't agree more, and I really appreciate that about you, Keith, because not all speakers are like that. I think for the most part we see that at Sherman College because they're a family down there and they're all hanging out together. But I've been to plenty of other venues where, you know, the speaker will come in and just do their hour and then blow out, you know, and that's disappointing. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the greatest information I've gotten from you have maybe been in the hallway. So you're always so generous with your slides and your information, and you've got so much of it. I'm sure they're all going to get that at Lyceum, so I'm hoping they will join us.
The first Lyceum I ever spoke at, and this would have been about 93, 94, I got a room at the Spartanburg Motor Lodge, which is not far from the school,
And I stayed around late, and I talked to the students, and I talked to the after students, went back to my room, and then a student group showed up and knocked on the door. Now it's midnight. Then three more students knocked on the door at 1, wanted to talk. At 2 in the morning, there's a knock on the door, and I'd been asleep, and I sat up in bed and said, "Will you go the heck away?" The door busts open, and the local sheriff was blasting with guns blazing. Evidently, someone had stolen something, had robbed someone, had run into the motor court, and someone said they saw him go in my room, which they hadn't. So I, out of a dead sleep, just shotguns, guns drawn, while they...
Oh, my gosh.
And I'll never forget this. Someone came up and go, "Hey, it's not that guy. Wrong guy." And the deputy sheriff goes, "Sorry, sir. Go back to sleep." That was my first Sherman Lyceum experience.
Welcome to South Carolina.
That was harrowing.
Well, okay. So hopefully none of that will be happening this May. But, you know, the point being made that, you know, you're so generous with your time and really appreciate that very much. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels that way. So, okay, so what do we want to talk about now, Keith?
Fire away.
You know what? I would see if I'm getting Facebook. I wasn't looking at my Facebook scroll if there are people that somebody did just say that they were having a little bit of trouble hearing you. I don't know if you moved since
no.
the call talk started or not. I didn't either. And maybe just, I don't know. So speak up, Keith. That's all I can tell you.
Okay. I'll do my best.
So how about we talk about this? Because it's a question that came to my mind as you were saying about the research and how people are always saying that we don't have any research. I know that as a lay person, which, you know, we all were, but I think something happens to us when we go to chiropractic school, like our brains change or something. Is your feeling that most of the people that come into your office or that you're speaking with in the public, I don't want to say need research, but what do you feel like the role of research can be? How about that? Because I don't want to steal your Lyceum talk, let's talk a little bit about, you know, is that important that, you know, like the average person that comes into my office, I think, well, they're not all that smart. Like, do they really need to know research? Do I need to feed them data? Like, how about if we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Okay, first of all, and I use the word research in a very general to include evidence. And that evidence could include what we call traditional science research. It could include case studies. It could include opinions of the very prominent people. To me, a big one is just baseline physiology. I mean, just pure guidance physiology. This is how the body works. It's undisputable. It's found in every book. That's not research per se, but to me, that's very strong evidence that this is how, you know, a system works, and we can utilize that. So that's number one. Number two, most of the time when I hand someone research, I've already brought it up. I've already communicated it. I've already talked about it in a tidbit. I've already done the bullet statement on it. And now the supporting research, the PhDs, that they'll look through it only as a way of, okay, he's not making this up. He's validating what I'm saying. That's how I got into designing health information that I now offer and sell. Was I was creating it as a way to validate what I was saying. And so it wasn't that people sat there and read every word like the e-reports they have. And this is not a commercial, by the way. Most people in the offices, they read through them. They don't read them, they read through them. The science geek nerds read every page and with a red pencil, but they read through them. They go to the last page, they see the references. They confirm that the speaker, the doctor, the CA has credibility. And this evidence actually comes far outside of the chiropractic circle. So this isn't something we just made up or thought of. You know, it's baseline. And that can be used in any walk of life. I remember having a guy, older guy, he was actually a retired pharmaceutical rep. He said, ain't a shred of evidence, Sonny. Not a shred of it. And I went back and I pulled, two or three inches of stuff that I had in my briefcase, had stuff laying around. And I walked back and I said, Mr. John, you want to take a look at that? And he thumbed through it and he goes, okay, you're good. I mean, he just there. You know, he needed that there. So it can be used across the board. I don't think you got to hammer it, but I do think you have to take evidence and research and make it what Dr. Swerdlich says is mentally digestible, where that person can handle it, where they can tolerate it. Because let me tell you something, and I subscribe to a ton of medical journals, and I read them, and I'm not the smartest guy, but I know what I'm reading. I mean, they write to make even a doctor think they're stupid. And they write in a way, and so you have to distill that down. So I do think it's valuable from a supporting standpoint. It should not be the primary marketing mission statement. We do need more research, but when we're funding research for chiropractic, we need to match every dollar we're spending in research with marketing dollars to promote that research. The best research in the world that sits in a drawer does nobody any good. And I've helped fund research projects, and I always say, so we get this published, then what? Well, we get it published. Okay, great. We've had stuff published, then what? Is there a way we're going to disseminate this? Is there a PR kit? Have we found the right people to put this out into the public? And I tell you, the one that I would do right now is this, the whole TexNex, the whole, you know, relationship between TexNex and systemic health. I mean, it's there, and there's many other things as well. And as a profession, we've not done a good job of having that congruent message across the board for a lot of reasons. They're very political and ideological motivated. So I hope I answered the question. Yes, it becomes very valuable in the practice, and it can be used in whatever capacity, from the old guy who, like my dad, who hadn't read a book since he was in high school, to the person who just geeks out of this kind of stuff. You still have it available. You still make it available. You still make it mentally digestible.
And that's an excellent point. So when you're saying evidence, and I guess I use the word research, but you say evidence, and it's a much better word. You're not saying, like, put these studies out on your coffee table in your front room there for people to come in and read. You're talking about quotes, clips. I don't know. Maybe, you know, the materials that you make are really very good looking, slick. You know,
they're
so little tidbits. Yes, they totally are.
And they create the curiosity. The person says, "You know what? I'd like to see the rest of it." And of course, we include the full citation on the front of everything we do. There's no cliches. It's a full citation, and actually, you're working on some systems where a person can take out their cell phone and take a picture of the slide, and instantly, not only that study pulls up, but at least 10 supporting studies. We're working on that right now.
Wow. That's awesome.
We improve our products every year. You know, we do the updates and all that, and we're constantly trying to make them more usable, easier to facilitate, and people respond to it. We think in sound clips, we think in 17-second sound bites, and so, yes, it does have a way of engaging the person into the conversation.
And so is this one of those, what you're talking about is a system that runs like on a screen in the front room?
Yeah.
Or okay.
Yeah, just
and
passive.
Are there other ways that you feel like people can use the information?
Sure, people run them in the – you're turning me into an infomercial. I don't want that, but I will.
I hear it.
And it starts getting people talking. You know, the doctor doesn't have to open up the conversation. The patient opens up the conversation about something they read. And then, what you'll see is people take out their cell phones. They want pictures of the presentation. They're going to take a picture. Well, the staff says, listen, let me send it to you. And when they send them – the JPEG from the presentation, it has the doctor's logo and information, contact information underneath. Now that patient walks out the door with their three, four, five fifth favorite slides on their phone, guess what they can do? They can share it. It becomes this pass along referral tool, and then of course it can be used on social media. People are doing very well with them. As long as you don't turn them into ads, you know, and you're trying to pick up new patients, if you work for engagement, to where people will follow you and eventually get to your website and eventually read more, then it does turn into new patients. If you're trying to post 100 things in 1 week to get 30 new patients, it's probably not going to work for you. That probably wouldn't sell it to you. But it becomes a talking point, you know, more than anything else.
And that's so important.
Nothing magic about it.
And so important because of the same thing that you were saying before the break about how you don't want to shove stuff down people's throats. Nope. So they see something like that and it's engaging, and then they can ask, you know, the chiropractor about it. Like, really? You never told me that, or you know, whatever they say. Exactly. And I didn't mean to turn it into an infomercial either.
No.
But your stuff is very good. And your methods are excellent. So, you know, whether somebody wanted to, which they can, go to your website and look at your products is a great way, you know, where chiropractors, if they want to be successful, they need the tools. And you have tools, and they should, you know, look at them. I don't have your website in front of me where they could go to.
It's just keithwassung.com.
One more time?
KEITHWASSUNG.com.
Oh, your name. Okay, keithwassung.com. I didn't get the beginning of it. So listeners, if you're interested in this material, but I think even if they weren't interested in your materials, your methods are excellent, Keith. They really are. They're spot on. You're approachable. Your information is mentally digestible. It's easy for the average person. And that's why I asked you that other question. I mean, the people that come into my office, I'm not saying that I don't have brilliant folks that come into my office. I do. But I'm in a kind of a blue-collar area. You know, they're just average people. They're not, you know, rocket scientists and whatever. But the principles of chiropractic are equally important to them. So how do we, you know, get that information to them and help them understand how important ongoing care is for themselves and for their whole family? So, and that's what I feel like you do. So I would hope that everybody would go and take a look at your stuff and come to Lyceum and hear you talk more, because they'll get that nothing that you said today will be repeated in May. You have so much more stuff to share.
I once did 18 hours over 2 days at an event. Let me tell you, 8 hours, which is my full one day, takes a lot out of me. And they'd had someone else bail on them and said, can you do another 10? And I had to go back to the room and think what I was going to say. And I have a lot of stuff. But I tell you what, I was approaching that last, like, 4 o'clock, just 2 hours ago. Like, I'm just about out here. I'm out of mouth was raw and everything. So, yeah, that's my extreme one. My favorite subject I couldn't listen to for more than 3 hours. So
that's amazing. So that's how much content you have. You could do 18 hours with no notice. That's amazing. So Keith, listen, we got a couple more minutes. I want you to I want to be able to give you just the last few minutes to share. I don't know what you want to leave the audience with. I don't know how many people are on the call, but I guarantee you that people access this through the Sherman archives as well. So people will be listening to this in the future. And I just want to give you the last couple of minutes to share whatever closing thoughts you have. What do you want to leave our audience with this evening?
I have folks ask me, I say, you ever get down? You ever get discouraged? You always seem real upbeat. And I go, oh, yeah, are you kidding? In the first 10 years I was doing this, going out and lecturing in public on top of having a job and funding all this myself, I've never taken a dime from anyone, the sales help, all that kind of stuff. But the first 10 years, there was 3 times where I was done. I mean, I was done with it. I'd had all of my materials, all my stuff, all my green books. I had them boxed up, addressed to Bill Deccan, who was a friend, and I was still going to get adjusted, but I was just done with it. And I figured out back then I never wanted to get in a position where I compromised what I was doing. You know, we grew up and we hear people say, coaches say, you know, the worst thing in the world is to be a quitter. I disagree. The worst thing in the world is to hang around and do it half-assed. I just assume somebody quit if they aren't going to give it their best. And it's so easy to fall into that through discouragement and through stuff. So I came up on a strategy about 22 years ago, and I'll share it with you. I've shared it with other people, that I do at least twice a year, sometimes three, never more than four, but at least twice a year. This is my checkup from the neck up that I do to ensure that I never slip into that accepting mediocrity. I go at 6 o'clock to a local hospital during visiting hours, and I just walk the halls. I'm not there to judge the medical system. I'm not there to judge what they're doing the absolute best they can in that situation. I'm there just to look at people's faces and see the end results of a failed approach to healthcare most of the time. You walk past rooms, you see the families huddled out in the hallway in prayer sometimes. You pass the room, you see a guy who's maybe 62, 63. You know, he's getting ready to retire. He's got a big 401k. He's going to coach his son's little league team. They got his wife. This is what they dreamed of. And you know what? A few days ago, he went to the hospital. He's not coming out. I just walk the halls, and I just look at people, and I breathe those hospital fumes. And if I really need an attitude check, I go up, and I look at the babies. There's always one kid up there in the NICU that this isn't right. And I'm very quiet about it. Again, I'm not judging the hospital in any way, shape, or form. And after about 2 hours of that, I walk out, and I sit in my car about 5 minutes, and sometimes I cry. Honestly, what I've seen, and I realize, you know what, there's a lot of work to do, and I can't get complacent, I can't compromise, I can't back off, because I've had so many opportunities, I've had so many attractive, shiny offers along the way, and I've always, I guess because I'm stubborn, turned them down, just wanted to stay on course, and so I do that, and I've taken some doctors with me, and just to reestablish what we're doing. You know, sometimes chiropractors get down themselves and say, I don't see the miracles. You know what? You got a family into regular care, that's a miracle. They're abnormal compared to other families that are not under care, that embrace medicine and a lot of drugs and things like that. They're absolutely abnormal. That's the miracle. The miracle is nothing ever happens to those people. And that's the essence of prevention via the chiropractic lifestyle. So I do appreciate Sherman having me on. Every time they have me on, I think this is going to be it. This is the last one. They bring me back, and I'm really honored to do Lyceum. I'm not doing very many chiropractic events this year. I'm doing more focused back in the public. In fact, I'm only doing two, maybe three this entire year. And so I look forward to seeing you up there, and you were just an absolute fantastic host. And I appreciate Karen setting this all up and the technicians that put all this together. I thank them.
Well, thank you, Keith. That was an excellent closing. I really appreciate you're down-to-earth style, and you are excellent at what you do. You know, I couldn't agree more. Like, you know, you don't want to be a quitter, or you don't want to keep on doing something that you're not doing well at. So I just want to thank you so much, because you are your brilliant mind and your so generous heart. To share with Sherman on the Connect call tonight and at Lyceum this coming year, we're honored to have you, especially if you're not doing a lot of these anymore. We really are honored to have you, and I will be very much looking forward to seeing you in a couple of months there. Thank you.
It's gonna fly by.
One more time.
It's gonna fly by. We're gonna take matter of.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah 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 yeah. Absolutely. So thank you again for sharing from your heart. And thank you, everyone, for being on the call with us tonight. I know he fulfilled my promise to you that he would over-deliver. And, of course, he did. He always does. Thank you so much. This is Judy Campanelli, your vice chairman of the Board of Trustees from Sherman College, along with the incomparable Keith Hwasong. So glad that you were able to join us. Hope that you will join us next Monday for Sherman Connect. I don't actually know who's doing the call next week, but it's always
and Schofield after that.
Yeah, I think that Jeremy's in April though, or the end of March. I didn't have next week's call. No?
That's just what I saw on the schedule, but I could be wrong. I often am.
Well, one thing, look, I have it right here. No, April 2nd is Jeremy Hess, and May 21st is Freddie Schofield. But that's the caliber of people that Sherman Connect brings on to this call. And if you've been with us before, you know that. We bring on the Keith Lesungs, the Jeremy Hesses, and the Freddie Schofields of the profession. So whoever will be on next week, you won't be disappointed, I'm sure. So join us again next week. Thanks for joining us tonight, and have a good evening. Good night, Keith. Good night, everyone.
Good night.